full moon day, full moon of January, isn't it? So we have a month till the full moon of February, which is the Maka Puja, to practice, cultivate the way. And it's important to keep in mind that how to develop, how to watch and keep track of things, so that your practice just doesn't become perfunctory and habitual. Cultivating the way means that you have to really be vigilant and use wisdom, alertness, not just develop meditation habits. One way of brightening the mind to realize it's important to practice samatha meditation, to take time to just concentrate on something, either mantra or anapanasati, metta, pavana, way of uplifting, brightening your mind. The mind is pure, isn't it? Mind, the pure mind, but then we can get stuck in negativity, in depression, in feeling just in very low and negative states of mind, doubt and despair, depression. And so when one way of development is to realize that the mind is something you can actually work with. You can, whatever you put into it, it becomes that way. Until you really understand the true nature of mind, the true purity of it, then of course, until you really trust that and abide in that purity, then it's helpful to develop samatha as a positive, it's the way of being positive, of using positive and refined and inspiring images or nimittas. So it's like, for one thing, like devotional practices of taking refuge in Buddha Dhamma Sangha, in uplifting your mind, reflecting on the goodness of your life, contemplating the goodness here at Amaravati, the moral commitment, the high standard of personal integrity, the generosity of the lay people, the supporters that offer food and requisites to us so we can practice. Reflect on your own commitment, that is, you're now putting yourself into a position where the very best the very best is your goal, to realize the ultimate reality, to be free from all delusion. So whether the negativity might revolve around old habits of thinking that you can't do it, or you're not good enough, or whatever, or maybe personal dislikes, or peeves, or irritations about this person, or that person, or whatever. But that, if one just endlessly can find fault, and find something to be irritated with in the sensory world, there's no, anywhere you go, there's always somebody or something that can irritate us, just the way the world is. But in samatha, you're actually developing this power of positiveness. These modern, like these Soka Gakkai, Nichiren mantra type cults are just centered around positive thinking. Namo myoho renge kyo, namo myoho renge kyo, over and over. And you just pray to get a new Rolls Royce or something like that. And it seems to work. People seem to get the things they want by being positive about everything. But that's not, that can be merely a another obstacle on the path, because our goal is, I hope you aren't here to get a new Rolls Royce. Or to get a Rolls Royce or anything. Because of the way it is, you see, if you put something beautiful into your mind, then you're experiencing a moment of beauty. Like when you look at the flowers, it's actually a moment of beauty. Your mind is in consciousness, those flowers are in the consciousness. So that is, let's say, the flowers are beautiful. But the habit tendencies are strong to always be in this restlessness of the mind, where the mind just wanders about. Even with surrounded by beautiful things, we can still our mind can just wander all over the place. So you might just have momentary glances at the flowers, and for just a second, maybe, if that long, an impingement of beauty is there. But it's never appreciated, never cultivated. We're never deliberately cultivating this, unless you start practicing meditation. Samatha meditation is that way. One can take, depending on one's particular character, I mean, different things are, you know, not the same thing, doesn't always work for everyone, but with anapanasati, say, really think of when you're doing that, of, say, following the inhalation and exhalation. I used to find the contemplation of peace being very, I found that very powerful meditation. I used to breathe in just peace and fill my whole body with this sense of peace, and then exhaling the peace out to the whole world, the sense of peacefulness. And keep saying the peace, the English word, because the English word somehow meant little more than any other foreign word. So just the meditation on peace with the breath. I could get very, very high on that, very peaceful. Just that suggestion. I used to do that with letting go years ago. And I had this powerful insight into the second noble truth. And I just practiced letting go for about 2 years. It's this mantra, letting go. And I used to inhale on let, and exhale on go. Letting go. And I found that was another upaya that I developed that I found very effective towards just stopping the thought process of the wandering mind. Letting go, of course, is a kind of releasing thing. Peace is a very tranquilizing concept. And whatever you fill your mind with, you become that way. If you think of all the unpleasant things that happen or the stupid things that people do, then you become that way. You become someone who's discontented and grumbling, complaining, angry about the way the world happens to be. Because if you just fill your mind with that kind of those kind of perceptions, you become that kind of thing. You're like that, a grumbling, complaining, discontented, blaming, critical type of person. With metta practice, loving kindness, that's a very powerful meditation. Sense of loving kindness, may I be well, is always aimed at first towards this being here, and it's the conventional I. It's not a sense. It's not an ego. It's not to think of me, I as a person and as this person be well, but it's the sense of goodwill and well-being towards this form that we call ourselves. That's very important in meditation, to have a sense of have self-respect. It's important to respect yourself. And that doesn't mean from an egotistical position. Self-respect is the ability to appreciate these forms that we find ourselves in, and we get self-respect by doing good, by being moral, by being generous and kind. You can't respect yourself if you're selfish, if you're immoral, if you're mean-hearted, all these stingy and cruel, all these tell lies. All that, this is just, we can't, there's no way one can respect oneself if one is involved in that kind of immoral, unskillful activities or speech, wrong speech. The more you gain self-respect is through sila and through dana, through being generous, kind, moral, and then the self-respect is a natural way to feel towards yourself. Sometimes the tendency to just condemn, many people are very obsessed with their own faults and their what they consider failures or faults or problems. The things they've done in life, the bad things they've done in life, or whatever. So that this tendency to not respect yourself is very strong. To blame yourself or to disparage yourself as a person. And this is none of you have really ever done anything that bad, where you just have to sit here and think that you're just totally horrible, useless being. I mean, we've all done things in the past that we might wished we hadn't have done or something, but that's the way we learn from life, isn't it? There's no usefulness in dwelling on the flaws and faults that you see or what you think is yourself. So metta is a way of being kind and developing self-respect, and even being kind to and accepting your failures and faults, not justifying them or dwelling on them in negative ways, but being able to just accept the fact that maybe you're not everything you'd like to be, or the memories of your past, or the things that you feel guilty about, or whatever, begin to just accept that in a kindly way, rather than endlessly try to repress it or dwell on it with negative thought. So metta is a kindness. What is kindness? Contemplate kindness, and not just a sentimental kind of smarminess, not just being soft and wishy-washy, but real kindness. You have to rise up. You have to accept things and be kind to that which maybe you don't like. Isn't it? It's easy to be kind to those we like. And it's easy to be kind to animals and to little children and be kind to, I mean, be kind to people who are down and out, and be kind to all kinds of, say, beings that we feel sorry for or we feel attracted to. But sometimes we aren't kind to ourselves, or we don't feel much kindness or acceptance of the people close to us who we find irritating or who we're angry with or critical of, that live very close. It's much easier to spread metta to a billion Chinese you don't know than having metta for the monk sitting next to you who's breathing too loud in a silent meditation. Isn't it? One good monk or nun who might be snoring, or sometimes one just feels averse and angry, a billion Chinese, much easier to spread oodles of metta over to a billion Chinese who might be snoring, but you can't hear it. So metta is always, first we start with the immediacy of this being here, which sometimes we don't like either. Sometimes we don't like ourselves very much, or we feel, have a tendency to disparage. So we stop that with metta. We aren't sitting here thinking about what we've done wrong or how, you know, being negative, but having a kindness, even towards our weaknesses, which doesn't mean we're justifying weakness or faults, but it means that we're not dwelling on it in a negative way. We're not obsessed with our failures or our faults, and metta is a skillful means of dealing with that. We're not measuring this being with the very best and saying, because I'm not the very best, then I'm no good. That's very cruel, isn't it? To say compare yourself, your appearance, or your character, or your abilities with the very best, then of course you're always going to feel useless and hopeless, because what you think is the best is something else, isn't it? It's not what you have to live with. You have to live with this being, this form, this character for a lifetime. So it's very important to have a proper attitude towards yourself, this sense of self-respect, kindness, acceptance, patience, understanding about the way things are, so that your life within this form is something that you begin to appreciate. Being the way you are, it doesn't matter. we all have to learn from our own particular faults and failures, also from our shortcomings. We must learn from the way it is for each one of us. The way life is for this being, I can't learn from the way life is for you, because I'm only with you brief moments in eye consciousness or ear consciousness or nose consciousness. But I've had to be with this creature for many years now. Until this creature dies, I have to be with this form, and the character, its traits and tendencies. So metta, say, as a way of having goodwill towards yourself, willing the good, self-respect, and then from that, from may I be happy, may all beings be happy. And so then this sense of well-being kindness, acceptance goes outward towards all the other beings who we can possibly conceive of, from those we love and like and trust and respect, to all those that we don't like. With metta, it's not a matter of liking. It's not liking. You can have metta for those you don't like, which means goodwill towards your enemies, goodwill towards people who irritate you or insult you or have hurt you. It's this sense of goodwill doesn't mean it's impossible to like someone who's your enemy. Someone who's an enemy, you can't like. You can only dislike them. But you can have metta for your enemies. So metta practice is a part of our life. Every day we send forth this goodwill, kindness to all beings. And it's a way of really opening our hearts to be able to send forth from our minds good thoughts, good wishes. Because at that moment, that is an energy going out from us, and it is good. You think, well, it doesn't really amount to very much because it's nothing you can measure. You can't measure how much your metta practice is affecting a billion Chinese that you don't know. But that's not something that we need know at all, is it? The fact is that we have this ability, this miraculous ability, to generate good thoughts and to spread metta with our minds. It's quite a miraculous thing to do, isn't it, when you think about it, when you contemplate that, being able to think kind thoughts, beautiful thoughts, send good wishes. That's a marvelous thing to be able to do with your mind. That's to be able to really do. I used to contemplate, what is the kindest or most beautiful thought I can think of? And just trying to understand what the mind is, what is in conceptual terms, what is the finest, the best thought, concept in the human, in any language. What is the worst? And then of course you have love and hate and the superlatives and that which is the most grand, the most beautiful, total and complete and utter absolute kindness, love, generosity. Total and complete selflessness. You think of on and on and on the ultimate thoughts of a human mind. And the meanest, what are the meanest, nastiest kind of thoughts that a human being can have? Thinking is a miraculous gift we have, which we do all the time and we use very badly most of the time. But yet it is a marvelous thing a miraculous gift that we have. That we can actually think. And that we can conceive the best and the worst. We can actually think, may all beings be well. All beings. And that means that's all embracing a thought that we can generate from our minds that we can think of the welfare of all beings. So that shows, you know, the kind of power of our human condition, that we can actually conceive of a totality. No, we're not just earthbound animals, or just caught in our own species. We're not just, may all, only the Buddhists be happy. That we can actually, we can conceive of all, even the Muslims. even the Christian. The demons, don't we? We pray for the demons. The Imina Punya. What other religion would pray for demons? Just in our own tradition, the Buddha Dhamma Sangha, Buddha is the superlative form of the knower, the one that can think and know ultimate truth. It is a fantastic word, Buddha, Buddhi. It's universal intelligence. Buddhi is universal intelligence. Buddha is a personification. It is a word of that means a total knowing, total undiluted being. Dhamma is another marvelous word we have. You just don't have such words in the English language. Dhamma is. Truth is just not even, doesn't even come close. Ultimate truth or something like that. But it is such an all-embracing, it is the word that has everything and nothing. It is the superb ultimate word, Dhamma. Because every other word fits into Dhamma. Every other symbol. God and the devil, heaven, hell, the deities, the demons, the hungry ghosts, the Brahmas, Vishnu and Shiva, the whole lot, Jesus Christ, Muhammad, all of them, the whole gamut from A to Z are Dhamma. It's all Dhamma. So that is you can't do better than that. Dhamma is it. So I mean, we might as well. That's why we have to take the word into the English language. There's no point in trying to get a kind of pukey English translations. But the Sangha. This means community, but it also has the. It is Sangha is the group, isn't it? The sense of community of being a group of religious seekers. It's not just me as a person, one isolated person on a religious path. It's the sense of Sangha that we take refuge in. All the seekers, all the supatipannos, ujjapatipannos, and so forth. All those who are doing the good, practicing the good, the direct, the clear, the truly sincere in what they're doing. So that these are words, and these are marvelous words, aren't they? That we have. We can actually create concepts with our minds. Now, no other creatures that we can see or know on this planet can do that. This is definitely a human gift, a special human ability. We can now conceive of global village. These kind of Aquarian age words are now becoming quite ordinary. Human family, global village, one ecological unit, the planet, Earth. I mean, these are quite new to humanity, aren't they? Even like 30 years ago, nobody ever talked like that. Only 30 years ago, no one ever really. There's a few visionaries, maybe, who actually thought in those terms. But generally speaking, those words were unheard of or never used. Human family, global village, seeing the earth as one living being, understanding the totality of the universe. People say even 30 years ago were so caught up in just their little space and their little countries that it's been quite a jolt to the British to even think of themselves as in expanded terms as being Europeans. They've resisted that one for ages. Human family, I don't know if the British will ever... Now, what we think, you know, when we think in this way, it's a very skillful way to think. To think of human family rather than my country or my ancestral family, as only the family I care about. Because we can expand our minds. Our minds can be very narrow, very mean. Just this person, and that's all. That's all I care about. I'll spread matter to this person, but I don't care about the rest. The rest can all just go to hell. Doesn't matter. Or just my group. That's all I care about. Just my friends, or my country. Just my country, and the rest I don't care about. But then we keep opening up wider and wider to the human family, to all beings, to all races. Now we're not thinking in terms of white people as being somehow more important than others. Now that doesn't ring true anymore, does it? Only really stupid and foolish people think like that. So we see we feel a connection as human beings with all others, with the Africans, the Asians, the whole lot. It's a human family. And that, when we think like that, then that gives us a much, then we think of them as family rather than as not family. If they're not family, then what happens to them is not important to us. But when it's family, then it is important that they don't starve and they have enough, they have proper facilities to survive, and the Armenians can rebuild their country, and the Bangladeshis and the Sudanese and so forth, because they're family. They're no longer just foreigners over there that don't really matter. This is how one human being sitting here, like myself or like you, can get a feeling, can actually create this miracle in our mind of a totality and an all-embracing beauty, a kindness, a compassion, a joy. This is when you think of it, when you contemplate, this is quite a miracle that we can actually do this. And when we do it, of course, the mind is bright, because this is all very good. When you think like this, then you feel inspired and your mind is bright, because This is what goodness does. When you think in good ways and kind, generous, loving, compassionate ways, the very goodness itself is the reward, isn't it? You feel good, you feel happy, you feel inspired, you feel uplifted by the nobility, the grandness that we can generate in our own minds. But if we get selfish and mean and spiteful and jealous, then it's ugly, isn't it? If they sit here with the mind all full of spite and anger and complaining and grumbling, and it's an utter hell realm. The mind just contracts and shrinks into a nasty little thing. So that you begin to see how to train and work with the mind, how to develop it. Samatha very much is the way of developing that very positiveness, the way of brightening, uplifting, inspiring the mind. Then as you cultivate the Eightfold Path with Vipassana, then you have that insight into the nature of things. You're not just caught into positive thinking, as you're not just one who's creating, but you can let go of that because you see all that arises ceases, and you realize an ultimate reality that is truly peaceful and gives you complete and an accurate understanding of the way things are. It's the right understanding. Now this community here, no matter on a personal level, sometimes we irritate each other or frustrate each other, whatever, but contemplate, this is a very good community, people who've made a strong commitment to Dhamma and to the good, the will to do good, and living under moral restraint. So whether these whether we like them, like each other all the time, is not, that's asking too much. Not a matter of liking, but everyone here is worthy of respect. And so that when we contemplate and we appreciate each other more for the goodness of our lives and the commitment we've made to the holy life, and therefore on the personal level, whether we are irritated or annoyed or angry or whatever with somebody, it's in a perspective, isn't it? We're not exalting that and making that a kind of obsession in our mind, because we understand the nature of our mind and how it works. So we're not just caught in kind of dreadful habits and obsessions when we understand how our mind really is and what our true nature really is. Now in this country there's also a tendency to be very cynical, isn't it? In Britain a lot of the humor and attitudes are towards kind of being critical and disparaging, and to really kind of cringe at positiveness. So that, because the British don't like a kind of smarminess or kind of syrupy, sweet paeans of praise and sickly kind of sentiments. One way it's very good that people here are not given to kind of being foolish in their and over-enthusiastic about things, and getting carried away with things. But the danger lies in being stuck in tendency to be negative towards the good, thinking of it as being silly or foolish or not real. I heard when Ajahnananda was teaching the metta practice down in Chittor, some of the monks had quite a time with that. Because they just felt averse to Ajahnananda's metta. Because there's something in us also that wants, they may all be well, there's also another reaction that wants to say something else. But remember, this isn't a just a sweet society of naive do-gooders. That's not what I'm asking. But for learning how to develop things, how to develop the mind, takes wisdom. We do need our critical faculties, and it isn't very nice to kind of swing into silly sentimentalities and do-gooder type attitudes. I mean, I don't like that myself. I feel kind of sick at my stomach with a lot of things that people, you know, think are so wonderful. But I do appreciate the ability of the mind to create positiveness and beauty, and that is a miracle. And it's not coming from foolish sentimentality. It can come from wisdom, from understanding. So see, metta is that. It's something not a weak sentiment, or just a nicey-nice thing to do, but something quite powerful and real and coming from wisdom, and make it a sense of strength rather than a mere kind of pallid sentiment. With the sharing of blessings, the punya, imina punya, this is another thing that Westerners find difficult to comprehend. Idea of merit and punya. But in the context of Buddhism, of course, it is a very important aspect of any Buddhist's attitude and way that one relates to the world, is that we're in this world and we're living here, and we try to use our lives for blessing it. Admittedly, sometimes people think in kind of superstitious terms of doing good work so that they get a kind of points or gold stars, and then they in the next life they get a reward for all the good things they've done in this one, which is a kind of popular interpretation, but that's not really what it means, because it's its own reward. Just like thinking a good thought right now, a kind thought, in this very moment of that kind thinking, there is a happiness there. It is its own reward. It's not that I'm going to think kind thoughts so that. That I'm making these points, accumulate these little points, so that when in my next life I'll be reborn in a better place than I was in this one. The fact that punya or what is like a blessing or what is truly meritorious or fine or good, we try to do. And we try to use our lives as a blessing for others, so that how we live, what we do, what we say, is a blessing is a grace, a goodness being coming from us for the welfare of other beings. And that is real punya. And the reward is the fact that that is just a lovely way to be right now, isn't it? It's not that you're going to, you're asking for a reward in the future, because it is worth being that way now. That kind of thinking, that kind of action, that kind of speech is the reward, is that it's blessing us right now. When we're aware, we appreciate that. When we're aware of how things are, then we find delight in thinking good thoughts and in doing good works and in using our speech in skillful and right ways. So in this retreat, the sila here, all the people keeping the precepts. And the people giving the dana those practicing the pavana and all the goodness, the blessings, the punya of this retreat, may it be for the welfare of all sentient beings. Now that is a absolutely marvelous thing to say, isn't it? All that is, you can possibly do that is good, say that is right and honest, and all that is beautiful and true and worthy to think, and try to live our lives in such a way that our very existence on this planet is a blessing, is blessing all sentient beings. And that, you can't possibly think greater than that. That is the ultimate in ultimate kindness in just our ability to think. Now, of course, if it's just a perfunctory thought, then it doesn't have much power. But our intention, isn't it? We're actually living here, keeping these precepts, committed to monastic discipline, practicing the meditation. I mean, we're doing everything that we can to everything that any individual could possibly do. That the restraint, the whole mood and atmosphere is one of wholesomeness and goodness, virtuousness. So at this time, this retreat is a special offering for the welfare, for world peace. Let's make it for world peace, for awakening more and more human beings to Dhamma, and for the welfare and happiness of all sentient beings.